Thanks for that. And Dave McCarthy, McCarthy and Associates, it's out to me. Dave, morning to you.
Morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. We've got quite a few questions in. I'm going to fly through some of them with you this morning. I've some savings and a reasonably small mortgage. Would it be wise for me to clear it? This caller wants to know.
Yes. I think at this stage, if you have a mortgage that has dropped down to what they call it, described as a small figure, I think it'd be worthwhile to get rid of it, as long as you don't leave yourself short in relation to your savings. We all need to keep money for the rainy day. We never know when we might need it. But if that's the position you're in, yeah, you should. Because obviously you're paying a lot more in interest at this point in time than you would have been a couple of years ago, with interest rates having gone up substantially. So you're going to save yourself, you know, money depending on the level of mortgage
you can afford
have.
It.
If you can, well, they obviously can, yeah.
Clear it. All right.
Just one point on that, Keith. When you clear a mortgage, you're supposed to get your title deeds back, which you're entitled to do, and the bank have to send them to you. But I have found that on occasions, banks are a bit remiss in processing that request, and I would just say, keep an eye on your title deeds, make sure you get them back in a timely fashion, and don't just forget about the fact that your mortgage is gone, but you do need the title deeds. They're very important.
Mm. Now, how much of a pension will I need to build up for my retirement? How long is a piece of string?
Exactly, you just took the words out of my mouth. It's very hard to answer that question. You can come up with a clinic and answer, and there's kind of, if you like, a lab formula, for want of a better way of describing it, as regards what we all would need maybe to provide us with half our income when we retire. All I would just say is put as much as you can in for as long as you can, and hopefully it will grow for you. We're not sure whether this person is in employment or whether it's a personal pension, but the principle is the same irrespective of whether you are an employee or self-employed. With an occupation scheme with an employer, they're making contributions, and that is a big help for people in that situation rather than you having to fund it yourself. We don't know what age they are, but what I would just say is a simple rule of thumb is put as much in for as long as you can, and within your which is affordable for you, and hopefully as the years progress, you'll build up a nice fund for retirement. Mm. But sometimes people get put off, Keith, and they see a figure of what I need to build up in terms of a fund, and they say, oh God, I'll never achieve that. Yeah. You know, so I come from a different perspective, rather than just saying and giving the clinical answer as to this is the figure and this is what you need to put in, but you might be able to afford it.
Yeah. And again, start at an early age if you can as well. Some young people don't want to even hear of the word pension.
You can understand it too. I mean, you know, it's a long way away. But, you know, I suppose once you kind of get into your 30s, you know, it becomes something that you should begin to think about. And obviously the older you get. But the problem here is you can't just wait until you're much older to fund a pension, then it's too late.
All right. I'm an AIB customer and I've had an issue with them over transfers that I make and then they freeze my card. My wife is a Bank of Ireland customer and she does not have the same hassle.
I've come across this a few times in the last couple of years, and it's particularly with AIB where they seem to be
security conscious.
OTT, exactly, on their security.
Can you ever be OTT and security?
Well, you can when your card is frozen on you, unbeknownst. Mm. I spoke to this person recently who came in with that comment. And what happened was they did a transaction, something online, nothing major, over a weekend. And it was rejected. Okay, there was no reason for it to be rejected. But then the following Monday, they get a phone call from AIB saying that their card was frozen because they thought the transaction was suspicious. And that had they got a text message. He said he never got a text message. Sorry, this was Tuesday. He tried to do this on Sunday. He never got a text message. And, you know, it just proves the point that you can be security conscious, but if you get to a certain level where you're so obsessed about the security and the transactions that are going through that you're causing, you know, day-to-day problems for your customers.
No, I get you, but there's such fraudulent activity out there currently. And how do you know one? How did the bank know one against the other?
Well, it's not, in one sense, it's not really the bank's problem to know. It's the individual should be taking the cautious approach themselves as to what they do online. But there is a question mark here, which is an obvious one. Why is it that AIB in particular seem to be excessive when it comes to security. And they will say it's obviously to protect their customers. I would say no, it's a bit OTT by comparison to the other banks that are out there.
Okay.
And evidence is there to prove it.
All right. Am I covered by the deposit protection scheme up to 100,000 if I deposit money with an online bank like Revolut?
Very good question. And it's important to know that when you're dealing with these online banks that that you are covered by whatever protection schemes that are out there. The deposit protection scheme covers you for up to 100,000 per account per individual. These online banks, most of them are regulated within the EU. If you're not dealing with one that's regulated within the EU, you won't have that protection. So, for example, the likes of Revolut is regulated within the EU and authorised, so therefore the deposit protection scheme does apply to them, and it applies right across any bank in, that's based in the EU. If you're dealing with an overseas bank, which may be based in the States or something else like that, well, you don't have cover as an individual under this scheme, but you may be covered under something else that the bank has in the country that they're authorised. Mm. Generally, once you're dealing with a legitimate institution who is properly authorised and they're not allowed to take deposits, by the way, unless they are, you shouldn't really have any cause for worry.
Mm. I have a sum of money to invest, which is just about into six figures. I have been advised to put it all into one investment. Is that such a good idea, or should I diversify?
Yeah.
How much is six figures? Is that
100,000 plus?
Okay.
So
a lot of money.
It is, yeah. I would just say I'm a great believer in diversification. You might split that into two or three and put it into two or three different types of investments, maybe with different structures, maybe with different levels of capital protection or risk. And also maybe different terms, so that what you're trying to achieve here is a kind of consensus amongst your investments that maybe one will perform better than the other, but you're looking kind of for a blend across all two or three that you might have, that at the end of a 4 or 5 year cycle, you've achieved, you know, reasonable growth. But I'm a great believer in not taking unnecessary risk, and I don't believe it is appropriate to take a lot of risk to be able to achieve reasonable returns. And the other thing too is, I would say to this listener, my experience has been of people generally in Ireland, they like a kind of very kind of comfortable level of risk. In other words, they might want protection, but they're also willing to take more modest gains and have a more realistic expectation of gains without taking excessive risk. So diversify, yes.
Somebody else said, investments with life assurance companies covered by the deposit protection scheme?
No, they're not, because they're not deposits. But therein, I wouldn't have a problem with any investment that's made with a life assurance company, because these companies are highly regulated. They're very solid. They have enormous capital assets. And in fact, during the financial downturn where banks were being hit all over the place, and we've seen bailouts and that, it never applied to any of the life insurance companies. They weren't in that position. They weren't financially hit with during that period. They didn't need to be bailed out. They have a different structure. And the fact that the deposit protection scheme doesn't apply to them is not something you should concern yourself with.
Does Dave McCarthy know anything about the English pension? I was told to top up, but nobody is answering the phones or emails, and I don't know what to top up by.
All I will know is that the UK government brought out an opportunity for people to top up their public pension that they would have had over the years, and that basically would give you an enhanced figure when you retire. That person must or should have got correspondence in relation to this. I don't really know, if you didn't get correspondence, how are you going to manage to, who you're going to contact?
Do you know what, I know Mel Morgan was on with us, he was a colleague indeed of ours in the university. He's now working in Waterford and he specialises in this area and he's a big company to do so. So that person just emails comments at goldbybfm.ie with that question. I can get John to send out Mel's details there. Somebody asked about getting rid of a regular savings life assurance policy.
Well, life assurance savings policies have been around for decades and...
Decades,
and they promise a lot and under-deliver, in my opinion. What is it? A life assurance policy that has savings attached to it is very simply a savings plan. My experience has been the need to be in operation for at least 7 years to perform, so they're very long-term. There are high charges for inbuilt. I don't like them. I've never liked them. And if you have one at the moment, what I would suggest maybe is you could do one of two things: cancel it and take the money and put it into something else, or else freeze the premiums and then save that money in an armed deposit account. Mm. And you could leave the capital sum there if you want to and see how that performs. But you might be better off to take the first option and just get rid of it completely.
Mm. If you want independent advice, you can do so. Dave McCarthy, a financial advisor indeed from McCarthy & Associates in Wood Quay, on 0915660222 for further details. Dave, thank you, Dave, for joining us today on the programme. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. Now, yesterday morning in the programme, I spoke about men and women separated, divorced, widowed, and how are they coping. And I told you about a special event taking place indeed on Friday the 22nd to Sunday the 24th of March, and it's taking place in the Stard Sea Centre in Mullaghmore in County Sligo. I'm joined on the line by Ursula Kelly, who's the coordinator of the event this year, and she joins me on the line. Ursula, morning to you.
Good morning. Listen, I find it hard to hear you.
Can you hear me all right there now, Ursula? Keith here, can you hear me?
Okay, a little bit clearer, yes.
All right. Congratulations on this, by the way. Who are you trying to target, Ursula, to go along and get the information?
Well, we would like to reach people who are more than a year or more bereaved, you know, through death or divorce or separation of a committed relationship. You don't necessarily have to be married, you know. So anyone who's experiencing loss and find they're not able to cope, you know, that, and it's going on, and, you know, this program really helps people to just understand where they're at and start the road to recovery.
I love the title of it, Beginning Experience, because it puts them on the beginning of a new road.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And a lot of people, most people who come on the course will say it is a big turnaround in their life, you know. They get to understand they're not crazy, you know, they're not falling apart. Grief is a hard road, you know. And then they decide they want to make changes in their life and live the best life they can from here on in, you know, even though there's a huge loss and gap in their lives because a loved one is gone.
And do you see people on an ongoing basis increasing in confidence, can I ask you, Ursula?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You would get people coming in, you know, closed in on themselves, unsure of themselves, broken with grief, you know, whatever circumstances they come from. And then as the weekend goes on, even during the weekend, you see people opening up and smiling and, you know, relating to each other. And at the end of the weekend, there's a big shift. And then we meet after a month, there's another shift. And then people have the option of coming on team and going through a program. And then they will begin to give the program, the weekend. And that's also an amazing healing journey because you're, you know, kind of examining your life a little bit more and sharing it with people. And it's an amazing, it's a wonderful program. I have to say, it's very beneficial. I've been on team myself for about 6 years now. And every time, you know, there's a shift in your own understanding of things. And yeah, it's a wonderful program.
Where can they get details? Your line isn't great, unfortunately, Ursula, but where can they get details on this now this weekend? So it's running from Friday the 22nd and Sunday 24th. Lovely Star at the Sea Centre in Mullaghmore there.
Absolutely. Beautiful place. Yeah. If they ring Maureen on 087-664-6896.
96. So 087-664-6896, ring Maureen from there, and she can take you through it then from there.
Ursula, she'll take us through.
Thank you. Apologies about the quality of the line going out to you there today, but that's Ursula Kelly joining us there, the coordinator of the event this year. But ring Maureen on 087-664-6896 and do so straight away, please, if you don't mind. That's 087-664-6896. Now, Poetry Day Ireland is celebrating their 10th anniversary. I'm joined by the Operations Manager for Poetry Ireland, Barry Lennon, joins me on the line today. Barry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks very much for having me on today.
Come here. Thank you. The seagulls are even helping you through the poultry day, so they are.
They are. Dublin's beautiful metropolis surrounding me here. Seeping into the phone call.
Absolutely. Listen, and it's a big day, so it is, for Rita Ann Higgins. It's a big event, poultry event for her in the town hall tonight. So poultry is all around us, so it is. But when is your 10th anniversary taking place?
It's taking place, so in Poetry Ireland, we run Poetry Day Ireland every year. So it's on Thursday, April 25th this year. And we're encouraging anyone that would like to find out more information to go to poetryday.ie or poetryireland.ie. And we're also Poetry Ireland on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook as well.
Again, celebrating 10 years, poetry is just so popular currently.
It is, really. I think it's, as a country as well, we kind of recognise it as such a powerful force, and the arts in general really are across every discipline. So it's really great to see that people are recognising it now, and there's a lot more supports and paces to support up-and-coming poets. And as an organisation, Poetry Ireland, that's part of our remit to do things like Poetry Day Ireland, and as well we do publications, events, education as well, to support the wider community learn and engage with poetry as an art form.
Yeah, and some people say, oh no, poetry is not for me, but poetry is for everybody, so it is, including the flipping seagulls.
Exactly, it is indeed, Keith. Yeah, it's for everyone, and I think poetry really is around us everywhere we look as well, and even if we look at spoken word or rap and hip-hop, it's in many parts of our culture and ways that we integrate on a daily basis.
So it's Thursday, 25th of April, and is it going to be nationwide or is it going to be Dublin-based?
No, it's all Ireland. So we're encouraging people that would like to register events that they have to go to poetryday.ie. We also have some small bursaries that people can apply for on the day as well. So there's the opportunity to do that as well. So we're listing all our events as they're announced on poetryday.ie. There's a couple of events already up there, would you believe? With more to follow. So it's an all-island celebration of poetry across the island of Ireland.
And is it known how many poets we have, roughly, that have even published in the country?
I wouldn't want to give you a guess off the top of my head of the exact number, because really, as we would see even through our publication, the various publications we do, new poets emerging all the time, which is brilliant to see, and to see the art form developing and evolving in that way. So through Poetry Ireland Review, our literary journal that we bring out three times a year, it's hard to even keep up with the amount of poets of submissions that we get each time.
And again, I suppose our president, Michael D. Higgins, is an eminent poet as well. And again, it's lovely to have the president having such a grow for the poetry.
Exactly, it's brilliant as well. And as an organisation, we would also administer the Chair of Poetry Ireland, which currently is the poet Paul Muldoon. That's a project that's a collaboration between UCD, Queen's and Trinity College. So that's supported by our president, Michael D. Higgins, as well. So it's great to see the art form emerging and being prominent within our society as a driving force for change and expression as well.
And I know that the likes of Paul Mescal, Margaret Atwood, that I love to bits and pieces, Hosier, Mary Robinson, they've all contributed to Poetry Day Ireland in the past and this year as well.
They have in the past. They've been some of the people that have been involved in the past. So we wanted to kind of encourage, it's not just open to the likes of kind of the stars you mentioned. It's open to everyone through every walk of life. And even you'll see on some of the events we've already listed on poetryday.ie, that there are various events happening throughout the whole island, which is great to see. And just to mention as well, our team this year is Good Sports, and we're asking people to interpret that, whether it's directly around sports or it's just really the idea of being a good sport in life, to use that as our team to guide any events people would organise around Thursday, April 25th.
It's a good idea, Good Sports, because it covers a multitude, that, doesn't it?
It exactly does, and it's great to see already, even in a couple of the events that we've already listed on the site, to see people's interpretation of that, whether it's directly sports related. And also this year we've done a call out to the poetry community, and through a selection process we're going to be releasing 12 poems from 12 different poets, and it's great to see even their interpretation of the team Good Sports as well. So it's quite an open team in many ways, as well as touching on the Olympic year and other big sporting events that have happened recently.
And I mean, from a poetry point of view, what poetry do you like? I'm not asking you to name your favourite child now or otherwise, but what type of poetry do you like, Barry Lennon?
Well, that's a hard one. It depends how long you have. I guess any poetry that really engages you and draws you in as a reader, it's not just, I could say, a specific, you know, era or type or poet, because I think many poems come to you in different ways. I think something that draws you in and gives you a different world view or incites you in some way. I think poetry is at its essence something that can inspire you and entertain you. So I think that's really my short answer. And I know you could arguably say I'm giving you a politician answer here this morning, but it's very hard to define one type of poetry, because I think as our form, like any art forms, it's evolving all the time. So yeah, it's very hard to specifically say one era or one style. You know, I think stuff, we see ourselves here in Poetry Ireland, just a variety of voices and a variety of styles all the time. And I guess the evolution of it as it progresses as well, and as people reinterpret ways of expressing themselves.
So I'd have been a child of the 60s indeed. And so I would have been in school in the late 60s, 70s, and coming out of school in 1980. But the way it was taught then, it was kind of, it wasn't beaten into you, is the wrong word for it, but you had to learn it off, and so you had to rhyme it off from there. Whereas the way that poetry is being dealt with now in education is a far more collaborative way of doing so. And so a lot of younger people are enjoying poetry.
Big time, because I think that a lot of people, when you mention the word poetry, they do have that trauma of that you've outlined there. But I think when people actually see that poetry is a way of expression and is a window into someone else's life or someone else's voice, and you know, as a reader, you can attain that from reading poetry. And I think when people start to see that poetic form is all around them, whether it's, you know, in music or in rap or in hip-hop or in other forms of expression, it becomes demystified, and it doesn't become this thing that's kind of seems a bit isolated from the everyday. Whereas, you know, a lot of poets, even in the era of the 60s, as you mentioned, you can see would have been focused on social issues, social causes. And we see poetic form has so many different varieties. It's not just kind of the regurgitation and the learning aspect. It's really the expression and the identity element as well.
Now, what you're asking is, anybody that may be listening to us today, organisation, school, work event and or otherwise, that are getting involved in Poetry Day Ireland, they're asking you to get involved, but also to register indeed with Poetry Day Ireland by the 1st of April. That's your cut-off point.
That is it indeed, yeah. And you can find out more information, as I mentioned, on poetryday.ie. And our hashtag on the day is PoetryDayIRL. And you can tag us as well on social media. We're Poetry Ireland. But we're asking people, if they'd like us to feature their event and give it a push locally, they can go to poetryday.ie and register their event as well. And also see, is there events happening in their local community that they'd like to engage in as well?
Listen, Barry Lennon, Operations Manager of Poetry Ireland, thank you for joining us today. And I hope you didn't silence the seagulls, because I was giving out about them. No, please, Barry, I hope.
I had to hush them away here in the background, you know, for audio reasons.
I have to write a poem about the seagulls, so I will.
I hope you'll submit it to us for Poetry Day
Absolutely.
Ireland.
Absolutely. Listen, Barry Lennon, keep in contact, and thank you for joining us. Operations Manager of Poetry Ireland joining us there. Now, quick commercial break, and we have two new books indeed, and they're examining aspects of prison history. Owen McCormick joins us next. Now, very good morning to you. Two new books indeed examine aspects of prison history, and as part of our History Talks series, I want to go to Owen McCormick, who joins, because two new books indeed have again been published in the Irish language, and the other one is, so it's called Gael agus Gavin, I do believe it is, I might have, and also Captive Columns, an underground prison press, 1865 to 2000. But Owen joins me on the line today. Owen, good to talk to you. How are you today?
Hi, are you? Keeping well now, thank you.
Are you behaving? Are you on hands-free, Owen, or can you come off if you are, if you don't mind?
I can, actually. that better now?
Oh, much better, so it is. I want to be able to hear you properly. Yeah. Well done to you.
Sorry about that.
Not at all. Listen, I mean, you've written extensively, so you have, and I know you for a long, long number of years. But I want to start with Captive Columns, an underground prison press from 1865. Like, it's quite fascinating reading the brief on this one last night. And again, the book examines an underground prison press developed by Republican prisoners as far back as 1865 and tells a fascinating story of a newspaper which ran for seven editions aboard a convict ship taking Fenians to Australia.
That's right, yeah. The boat was called the Hougoumont, and as it happened, it was the final transportation of prisoners, Irish prisoners or convict prisoners, to Australia. The colonies, as they were called, had begun refusing to accept any more prisoners being sent out, and the British penal system had become more organised within themselves, and they were holding prisoners back in the motherland, if you like. So this was the final transportation. There were 67 or maybe 70 prisoners on that who were Fenians, a mixture of military Fenian prisoners who had been recruited within the British Army and civilian Fenian prisoners who obviously weren't recruited within the British Army. They met up for the first time on the boat. Prior to that, they'd been kept in separate confinement in prisons like Pentland and Pentonville and Chatham and so on. And they met for the first time, and they were given, if you like, a sense of liberty on the boat. It wasn't complete liberty, but because they were kept separate from the other prisoners, the chaplain on the boat began providing them with sheets of paper. And they put together this, and it's called Remarkable for a good reason. Some of the editions had 12 pages. The final edition, the Christmas edition in 1867, was a bumper edition. It had 16 pages. They were all handwritten. They contained poetry by people like John Boyle O'Reilly and our poets. They were, as I say, hand copied. There might have been three or four copies made of each edition.
Wow.
And amazingly, a complete set of them were kept by a family who presented them to the National Library of Australia about 10 years ago. And they very kindly have made them available online so that people can go on and look at this. The name of the paper was called The Wild Goose, which was a play on the idea of the wild geese being sent from Ireland. Going to the wars in Europe. So it was a great newspaper to produce at the time.
And Owen, do we know what type of conditions they were in as they were making that voyage, and how many would have been on that boat with them?
Very grim conditions. There were 220 prisoners in total on the boat. And the underground of the boat, the below deck area, was in single cells. Very, very small conditions. They were very, very cramped. The food, as you can imagine, on a voyage that lasted 2.5 months, may have been began as reasonably fresh food, but as they went further on, they were really very grim conditions in terms of food and water. There were some fruit, they managed to pick up some supplies off other boats along the way, but the conditions weren't good. But the conditions that the Fenian prisoners were in, they said themselves that in comparison to what the poor old convicts were going through, that they were in reasonably, bearable conditions as opposed to the other people. Punishments were grim on the boat. There was a hot cell on deck where if there was any sort of misbehaviour by any of the prisoners, they were put into this small tiny cell and kept there in the blazing heat all day. On the boat deck, there was a triangle for floggings and whippings, and it was a grim sort of a 10 weeks of travel, I have to say.
Can I also just speak very briefly? I'm getting some other breaking news coming in on my headphones. Bear with me. The other book, indeed, which was published Askelge own by you as well, but it examines the important and unexplored aspects of prison life amongst Republican prisoners stretching back to the mid-19th century.
Yeah, so there is an overlap in terms of time for these books. This second book, Gaelic is Gaven, looks at the use of Irish language. It's really based around, the expression by Pierce in 1915, Neowain Gaelic Agusir. This sort of encapsulating what republicanism should become, that it should become both a cultural struggle and a political struggle or a military struggle, as it was. And so how did republicans stand up to this challenge? This is what this book is about. So it really deals, it begins with the Fenians as well, but it really goes through periods of imprisonment in Frongoc and in Lewes prison. The British couldn't understand what these prisoners were about, and one of the aspects that they couldn't understand was the Irish language. They really had no sort of sympathy with the Irish language at the time. So in punishment, they moved 28 of the prisoners from Frongoc, the leading language teachers, if you like, and Gaelic people, I suppose, Conor na Gaeilge, and they moved them all into one prison in Reading, and they actually created the first prison Gaeltacht. So, you know,
well done. Where are the books? I'd have to go to some breaking news, unfortunately, but where are the books available, and when will they be? Are they launched already?
So the first launch is taking place in the University of Galway on the 12th of April at a conference there. It's on a Friday night. And then after that, it'll probably be launched in around town and in our places. They're available at the minute in some shops. I imagine Conor na Gaeilge have them in Dublin and in Belfast and Seal. And they're also available from the website plud.ie. That's spelled PLUAD.ie. And they're available to purchase online there.
All right. Listen, thank you indeed for joining us today.
I appreciate your interest. Thanks very much.
Keep in contact. Owen McCormack Sloan. I'm just getting a message from John there. Say Leo Varadkar is set to step down as Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader. The cabinet has been meeting in government buildings in advance of the announcement. This morning has been intense speculation about the Taoiseach's future. And again, the government parties say that they don't expect today's announcement to trigger a general election. The press conference will be shown live on RTE News Channel and RTE One as well. So that's a fairly big piece of news coming in there. If you go back though to Kieran Cannon's piece with us yesterday morning when he sat in studio with us, just come back to that. He did say that Leo Varadkar did say to him last week that he wouldn't be staying on, that he won't be spending all his life in politics and as leader of Fine Gael as well. So it's quite interesting indeed, that news coming in. And just if you're coming to us right now, you can do so. But that Leo Varadkar is set to step down as Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader. The cabinet has been meeting in government buildings in advance of the announcement. This morning has been an intense speculation about the Taoiseach's future. And the government party say that they don't expect today's announcement to trigger from there today. So they're not going to happen from there. Now, though, that's interesting, I have to say, more than interesting altogether. Again, but if you take the piece in relation to what Kieran Cannon said yesterday morning, definitely the speculation that was fired overnight. John, that's news that's catching a lot of people.
It's catching a lot of people in Fine Gael off guard as well, Keith, because I've been trying to get a few people on to talk about it, and they simply have been caught off guard by this. There has been speculation over the past number of weeks and months that Leo Varadkar might step down as Taoiseach and leader of Fine Gael as well. And we're getting that news breaking in the past few moments as well. Now, there is a lot of speculation. Will this trigger a general election?
I think it will. You're absolutely guaranteed an election in this one. I think we could see all elections in June. Local, national, European.
There had been mooted, and we had mooted as well, that the government might, especially with this new Independent Ireland and Sinn Féin, when they were getting momentum, that they might actually call a general election before the local and Europeans to try and stop a lot of that momentum from gathering pace and from finding candidates in the local and European elections. So this is breaking news, Keith. We've been trying to get people from Fine Gael in the past few moments. They have been caught off guard by it. One representative who I won't name said they couldn't say anything, only to wish Leo Varadkar well in the new role. So they have been fairly caught off guard by this in a lot of quarters.
But if you go back, I was saying to listeners when he came in there, Kieran Cannon said yesterday that Leo Varadkar said to him when he spoke to him after Christmas and told him what he was going to do, and he said that it wasn't his intention, and he said it publicly, to spend his lifetime in politics. So,
but if you look back to the last general election, Keith, Fine Gael wanted to go in top position. The COVID-19 pandemic, those extenuating circumstances, and then they formed the three-party coalition with Fianna Fáil and the Greens as well. So Fine Gael are not where they want to be. We've seen the amount of people stepping down and not running in the general elections. Kieran Cannon, the latest, and now we see the Taoiseach himself, Leo Varadkar.
But Kieran did, he went through that with us yesterday. A lot of the people that have stepped down are retirement age and deserve to step down.
I know, but there's plenty of other politicians who are probably past retirement age and still running. So
Michael Ring is looking at running again.
To do with enthusiasm as well, and do you have the fight, and do you have the belief in your party that you can actually win when the next election comes through as well? So that's all speculation, that's all commentary as well, but it's interesting to see, and it's very... it's big news that's breaking, and you think it will trigger a general election?
My gut would be it will, yeah. That would be my gut. Somebody said, Keith, it's the best day of my life hearing that Leo Varadkar is gone. He destroyed the party. That's a fairly strong statement coming in on the phone lines this morning.
Very strong. And we're hearing strong statements against all the parties, whether all the government parties.
So that all the leaders.
We had Seamus Walsh earlier about Fianna Fáil. We've had others on about the Greens in the past and Fine Gael as well. So it is looking difficult for government. How can they keep going on in terms of the heavy referendum defeat, which they said wasn't a defeat for government, even though they all campaigned yes. And then some subsequently came out, said they actually voted no themselves. So it's interesting times in politics, and we'll bring you the very latest on it. We've been trying to get someone on for a quick word from a Galway perspective from Fine Gael. Haven't been successful as of yet.
It's fresh. It's only a few minutes into it now. Yeah.
And I was talking to one representative, and they said they actually don't know what the next steps are at this point in time. Will there be a leadership straight away?
That's what I love about this job, you know. I just love it because you just don't know from one day to the next what's going to happen. But I'd say Helen McEntee now, and I would think Simon Harris would put their name in the hat.
There's also talks of Jennifer Carroll McNeil as well.
Yeah.
Will they go for a female leader?
Don't know. And the likes of Simon Coveney, because of other things, will not go for leadership right now. And not his fault, but he won't go for it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be down. I would say you'll see the likes of Helen McEntee.
Harris would have to be the favourite.
I don't think so. Even though I think he's an excellent minister for higher education. I think he's one of the more proactive for higher education. I really do. And a very nice guy. Don't know, is it his time right now?
Well, he obviously wants to be a leader of Fine Gael when they actually get into government. And it's looking like all winds would say that Fine Gael are looking at a stint in opposition after the next general election. They wanted it, as I said, in 2020, but it looks like they could be firmly heading there now by choice, if nothing else.
We'll wait and see. I mean, again, it's just the independent party is going to colour things from there. BP joins me as well in studio. BP, morning to you.
Morning, Keith. And certainly yourself and John have been chatting there. This is an announcement that has taken the whole world in the country, we say, by storm. Certainly, absolutely no whispers, and we're all long time working as journalists, no whisper of this whatsoever. So what's going to happen at 12 o'clock is an announcement is expected by the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. He's going to announce that he's standing down as Taoiseach and also as leader of Fine Gael. We're hoping to take the feed of his announcement live here on Galway FM, just making arrangements for that at the moment. Other than that piece of information, there is no further information coming through at this point. No. It has often been Leo's style to put it all in his speech, so I suppose that's where we're going to get the information. So the newsroom is hoping to bring you that announcement live at 12 o'clock, so we'll stand by for it for more information.
All right, John, Bernadette, thank you for joining us. That's it for today. We're back with you live tomorrow morning, indeed live from Studio One. And you can well imagine what we'll be talking about tomorrow morning. Do you want to guess it? Really and truly, we're back. Tomorrow morning, just after 9 o'clock, and stay tuned throughout the day here for updates on that as well. That is it for today. Thank you to John Morley, who produced. Siobhan took all of your comments. Bernadette for popping into us there with that news as well. Stand by for news. I'm going to clear studio now, let Ronan Larder into it. It's a happening day. I think I need a siesta. Somebody just said, hi, Galway BFM. Leo Varadkar is gone. Yep. From yours truly, Keith Finnegan, until tomorrow morning, just after the 9 o'clock news. Stay tuned for everything that's going to happen throughout the day today. We shall talk to you then. Goodbye.